Welcome to episode 59 of Speak Beastie for April 8th, 2018. I'm Amy.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Lizzie.
There you are, Lizzie.
So,
we're all here.
We all are here. Even after the trailer last week, we're still here. Waiting patiently for more news. And speaking of news, I will bring this over to the Phoenix Register. Did you like that segue?
That was probably like the quickest segue into actual content we've ever had.
Ever?
Beautiful.
You're welcome, everyone listening. That, like, holy crap, you guys are talking about stuff? Not allowed.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the measles meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs knees, and how.
While this isn't technically Fantastic Beasts, I saw this in the news, and it just made me sad, but also warmed my heart. Good old Eddie Redmayne, our boy. If you guys don't know, Stephen Hawking died last month, and his funeral was this week, though, or the week that we are filming, or recording right now. And Eddie attended his funeral, and he spoke, and he had a eulogy there, which I thought was very sweet and very nice, because if you don't know, listeners, there's a great movie that Eddie won an Oscar for, Theory of Everything, where he plays Stephen Hawking. So it's nice to know that they're good buds, or that they were, and that he was there. Did you guys see pictures of that?
I didn't see pictures, but I did see, like, that he was there and he spoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was nice.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I
mean, it is cool. It's cool that the family was like, they're like, yeah, Eddie, please come and speak. Like, that they knew him well enough, or they trust him enough.
Yeah.
What a Hufflepuff.
I mean, I think that's nice if you're portraying someone in a movie about their life and, you know.
But it's like, I feel like there's a lot of people who wouldn't go. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's just a nice way to, like, memorialize and honor, you know, the fact that you had the privilege, you know, for your work to be developed because of this individual, and to honor, you know, the fact that you wouldn't have had said job had this person not had existed, you know.
Right.
Yeah. That was very sweet. Moving on to Fantastic Beasts news. This is kind of an old news thing, because we had the pictures on Pottermore for Fantastic Beasts that came out. But the one with Queenie, I thought was actually, it's like a little newer, because it wasn't in the US trailer. It's in the worldwide trailer. But they actually did. They also released it on Pottermore. Did you guys see that one? It's just a quick still, but it's of Queenie also coming into Paris, and I wasn't sure if that one was talked about as much because it was not in our trailer.
Where is this picture?
It's on Pottermore. It's on the trailer. It's on, like, the trailer breakdown, but it was in the worldwide trailer and not the U.S. trailer.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. If you go straight to Pottermore, it'll be under. It's like the first thing under Fantastic Beasts when it goes to the trailer breakdown.
What are they hiding from Americans? Why are they censoring
our trailer? And she looks very, very, very serious and very like, ooh, like, I'm here for business.
Oh, yes, this photo. Mm-hmm.
America loves Queenie, too. Come on, guys.
We love, I think we love her. She's ours. She's ours. Queenie's ours. Give it to us. England and everyone else. England has so many characters. Please,
you can't have her.
You can't have Queenie. Let us have Queenie. She's like the one American playing an American. Most of our Americans aren't even American. Let us have Queenie.
Let us have something. Dear God.
Literally.
It wasn't even filmed here.
I know, right? Gosh.
I think that was the most depressing moment for me. Was like, when we found out about Fantastic Beasts being in New York, I was like, yeah.
You're like, oh, they're going to film it in my hometown.
I will be there. I will be on the sidelines. I will try to be an extra. I will do everything I can. And then they were like, by the way, it's in the 1920s. And New York looks nothing like this anymore. Also, we're going to film it in London with a bunch of British actors. Because, you know, it's still Harry Potter.
Which is complete crap. Because you can find parts especially in New York City and like close it down. Like Warner Brothers has the budget for that. I'm sorry. They could close down streets that still look old timey, get rid of the cars. They could do it.
We had a decade of Joe being like, we need British people to play British people. And then she's like, who cares? They're just Americans.
Who cares who plays the Americans?
We don't care about that.
We don't care about them.
I do have to say, though, this still of Queenie, I'm just, like, admiring her style, and it's just something,
gorgeous.
It's just something I wish I could pull off, but will never occur, except in my wildest dreams.
She looks so, her hair, I will say, though, her hair looks very, like, different this movie, like, she has a different, like, different style going on, it looks like, to me, than she did last movie.
Yeah, it's a different color.
Her hair also,
her hair colors.
Her hair also looks like she just traveled, and thank God. Yeah. No one's hair is perfect after they travel. I don't care who you are.
Not even Queenie's.
Not even Queenie.
Queenie has airplane hair.
Porky hair? Do you think that's a thing?
Porky hair? Maybe. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Porky definitely. Even I think that like apparition hair should be a thing, especially how like Harry describes it in Half Blood Prince. It sounds like it's crazy stuff, you know? I'd be like, whoa, after I got out of that. But yeah, she looks very stern and very worried, but she has a beautiful little bumblebee on her shirt, and she looks great, like, regardless. I'm real worried about Queenie in this movie, you guys. I'm scared for her, my girl. I hope she's okay. I hope she's doing good. Okay, so going on to the next piece of news, this is a pretty big thing that happened in the more business side of the Potter universe, which we don't always talk about, but I thought, hey, let's. So it was a kind of a big story this week that Pottermore, good old Pottermore telling us stuff, dropped a large portion of its writing staff this week, which we all were very interested to learn about, I think, over at MuggleNet when we learned about that information. It was just like out of the blue. It looked like a lot of people just got dropped off.
Yeah.
Which was very odd. And so I have a few, there's a few different articles talking about this. There's like a BuzzFeed one and like a BuzzFeed News one and then a Refinery.com one, which was kind of breaking down all the information that was like out about this, of like the reasonings why. So a few things. There were some rumors that were like floating around the internet about people at Pottermore, like the writers themselves, were uncomfortable writing about Crimes of Grindelwald because of Depp's casting, and that they were struggling to write freely, just like about his character on the website, like for their articles. They didn't feel like free to write what they wanted. Although, the people at Pottermore have denied that this is the reason behind the firing of people. They said that this is not the reasoning behind this at all. It has nothing to do with Depp's casting. And that it's more of the company is reorganizing, which to me does make sense because we've seen the new Wizarding World logo, which is like on Pottermore. And they've kind of been doing a big rebranding this year as it is.
Yeah.
But it is kind of crazy that involves, okay, we're dropping a bunch of people.
Yeah. I could see where maybe that is true. Maybe writers didn't feel like they could actually write their opinion because they are under the brand.
Right.
But I don't think that would be the reason why they were dropped. I think that's something that comes out after they're dropped because they're free to say it now.
Right.
Free to
say it, yeah.
Yeah.
It may have been something for them, but it's not like the story is a bunch of people said, I'm quitting. It's a bunch of people are being let go.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then I saw this quote, which was from a former Pottermore employee, which I found to be very interesting how they talked about why this is probably happening at Pottermore. The quote says, I think turning Pottermore into an editorial site a few years ago was a lovely idea with the potential to be great, but the execution has been a big disappointment. It's essentially a glorified merchandise shop with some cute articles that might appeal to hardcore fans, but don't have enough point of difference from the rest of the internet's writing about Harry Potter to survive. Which I thought was very interesting, and essentially boiling down to, there are other websites online that talk about Harry Potter better.
What?
And more often.
Oh, really?
That may have done exactly what Pottermore is doing many years before they did.
Who's that?
Cough, cough. Muggle bit.
Who would that be?
What? Who could that be?
Who is she?
But I mean, I have to agree with this statement. I mean, I feel like a lot of us at MuggleNet also talk about that. It's like a lot of the things that Pottermore has begun to do, like editorial, like writing opinion pieces, or just like going, like breaking down trailers, or even their reread of Harry Potter, have all been stuff that we at MuggleNet have been doing for 10 odd years now, and if people trust MuggleNet as a fan site and as a fan community, and I think that they probably were going to come over to MuggleNet before they go to Pottermore a lot of the times, even though they are the official Harry Potter J.K. Rowling website, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And not to sound catty or anything, but they
but
actually...
Sound catty, no.
Wait.
Just kidding.
Where they say that it appeals to hardcore fans, that's where they lose me in that statement. Because if you're writing some cute, like,
fluffy,
fluffy articles, that's not hardcore fans. Hardcore fans are looking for, like, really detailed digging through, theorizing. They're not going to be like, oh, hey, look at these 8 gifts of Harry wearing glasses.
Yeah, I mean, agreed, because I feel like a thing that's also different between Pottermore and like a website like MuggleNet is that they are under the Warner Brothers. They're under their thumb. They're under their business.
Right.
They're part of Warner Brothers. They can't say anything negative about Harry Potter.
Right.
Which is like, wow, we love Harry Potter. We have problems with some things, and we can say negative things, or we can make fun of characters if we want to. It all in good fun. We can make fun of characters. We can say which books are our least favorite or which plot lines we don't like as much.
We can agree to disagree on things.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is what we can have arguments and debates and stuff, which I don't think is feasible to have working at Pottermore, which
and I
do.
I would think that theorizing about what's happening in Fantastic Beasts would be very difficult to do when you work for Pottermore as well. I feel like there would be a lot of, oh, you can't say that.
You can't say that. Or it's like, you're wondering, does this person actually know what they're talking about? Or are they just
exactly
at their desk? I think this is going to happen. It's odd. Yeah, Warner Brothers can't give away its own spoilers. That would be ridiculous.
It just kind of gets into this weird gray territory.
It does.
Is it Pottermore? Is it a fan site? I don't know.
Yeah, in the last, like, year or so, I feel like they've been trying to become a fan site, and it's like, you're a fan site for yourself? Like, I'm confused. You're like, I'm great.
We love ourselves.
Yeah. But, like, essentially, that's what it's become, which is kind of odd if you think about it. Oh,
too
gosh.
Funny.
But I thought we should take this moment talking about Pottermore to reminisce for a moment. All of us, everyone listening, let's all go back in our minds to the original Pottermore, to the old Pottermore.
The good old days.
Time. Good old days.
And remember the beta round?
Man, I had 2 accounts.
Yep.
It was great. Man, that was so, I felt it so cool, like, such a, like, such an official Harry Potter fan. It's like, oh, I have a Pottermore beta account, like, yep. Get on my level. I woke up at, like, 6 a.m. to get this message from J.K. Rowling. Get on my level.
I remember I slept in my robes and my sweater and my tie, like, the night before the announcement video came out. And I, like, woke up, and you can just envision it exactly as it happened. Me, like, springing out of bed, my wand is, like, on my bedside table, and I'm like, it's time!
Oh my gosh. Give it to me now. Today's the day!
Although I do remember them being like, this is...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Literally Ezra Miller. I cannot.
Yeah.
I remember them being like, this is going to be just as exciting as a new book. And I was, although I will say, I was a little like, this is not a new book. How dare you?
Right.
When it came out. And it's like, I don't feel like we appreciated it when we had it, because I feel like a lot of people would crap on Pottermore even back then.
Yeah.
I think they tried to hype it up too much. Like,
I think they did almost, too.
If they had just released it, like, I would have been so excited. But the fact they were like, oh, this is just as good as a new book, I was like,
and we were like, wait. And they wouldn't really explain. So it's like, in my head, I'm like, oh, are we getting new stories, but, like, published online? Like, what is this? But, yeah. I mean, it was still fun times, and I was so bad at potions. Like, so bad. I could never do them right.
These games were hard.
They were hard.
They were hard. Like, they were next level. Like, I love, but the pictures were so pretty, and I love clicking on all the different things and all the chapters.
I just remember, like, having to time out when I started my potions, because I was like, oh, if I start it now, it's going to be done in 6 hours. I need to be home to finish my potion.
And I don't think I ever finished one.
Not thrilled with it, trust me. She was like, what do you mean you have to be home to finish your potion? And I was like, yeah, Mom, witch things. It's fine. I just, like, got to get home. But I do have to say, though, what was most disappointing about the change from old Pottermore to what it currently is I was hoping when they took out, like, a lot of the engagement part of it, it was going to fill the void of what the encyclopedia was supposed to be. Pottermore was going to turn into an online encyclopedia where we would maybe not monthly, but we would get updates and a little bit more information. And we did. We got, like, character information that we didn't always have, family trees, which is nice. But yeah, it's like,
there has been cool stuff on Pottermore.
It's not the level of, like, what we thought the encyclopedia was going to be.
I want all the scribbled notes. I want all of the drawings. I want all of that. And it needs to be put somewhere organized on that site.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also feel like what they really should have done was they should have had this new stuff on Pottermore, but also kept the old website. Like, it's like a game. Like, I don't know why you had to give up the game for the information.
Right.
Because I really loved the house points. That was really fun. That's an aspect I wish that they kept somehow more on the website. That was just a fun time.
Yeah.
But kind of a question after that, what do you guys think that the future of Pottermore will hold after all of this fiasco?
I think I'm very curious, because since Joe's name is no longer in the Wizarding World logo, mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see what Pottermore will become, and because I think that's going to be the first place we see that change of what it really means to, like, step outside of, I don't want to say Rowling's permission, so to speak, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost wonder, will this become a separate entity? Like, Pottermore was almost like a replacement for J.K. Rowling's old website.
Right.
I'm wondering if the two will become separate again, and if that website will get revived as a place to have writings from her.
Oh, that would be nice.
Because I feel like removing her name from Pottermore, are we actually going to get the new writings released there anymore?
I think for now we will. I think right until, which is a long time, I feel like during the Fantastic Beasts movies, she's going to be still very much related to Pottermore and to Warner Brothers. You know what I mean? My worried about when that's going to diverge is once the last Fantastic Beasts movie comes out. Like, what's going to happen then? I know it's, like, so far in the future.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like that's when these questions are going to really, like, matter. you know.
Right.
And also, just another kind of question about that. So, because we don't have our old Pottermore game, do you guys think that the new Hogwarts Mystery game, which is coming out this spring, do you think that's going to fill the void? Did you guys get to play it at Celebration?
I played it. Amy left.
How was it?
I did not want to stand in that line.
And I was like,
can you wait.
I was like, I'm here. I'm going to do it. It's fine.
Can you give us a review of what you saw?
Well, they're like, oh, it's going to be 15 minutes. It was really like 6 minutes if, you know, you're not 8 and you know how to work an iPhone. So it takes you through and it's like, ooh, you are a wizard. And you're like, what? That's cool. And you choose if you're a boy or a girl, blah, blah, blah. You put a name in and it basically like kickstarts you. And I'm sure like this was just a demo version. Just like kickstarts you to the sorting ceremony. And it basically goes like, which house do you think you belong in? And you click on one. And then the sorting hat is like, very curious. Oh, and then says the house you clicked on, you know?
Do you think they should have put like the Pottermore quiz in the app?
I asked them if they would have considered being able to link up your Pottermore account.
That would be awesome. I would love that.
Because then I could have had my wand. I already have my house figured out, at least.
Yeah.
I know my Patronus.
That would be so awesome.
And they, like, gave me, like, a I can't really say, because I don't think they really had an answer for it. But, you know, an answer could go one way or the other. Like, they didn't want to get themselves in trouble. But it was, it's fun. So I'm concerned as to how long, like, the game will last, and not in terms of, like, how long people will play it, but how long it'll take for you to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
So, because with Pottermore, at least, like, once everything was up, if you sat down for a day, you could go through them fairly quickly, you know? You could go through the activities very fast. If you skip the potions.
It's hard to remember now, but when Pottermore first started, it was, like, it's not every year, but I think every 6 months or so, that's when you got a new book. It was like, you had Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets. Like, it took like a good few months before the next book would even come out.
Absolutely. But like, imagine if you logged into Pottermore like after they had uploaded the last book and you started from day one.
Yeah.
You could go through it
finish
fairly,
in a day.
You could go through it fairly quickly. So I'm curious how long it'll take for people to get through the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I have no complaints so far. It seems, I don't know if it's going to fill the void, but it's definitely going to be something, you know, that I wonder if it's going to be a one and done kind of scene.
Yeah.
Because it's a storyline. So you're going to complete your story. And then I don't know if there are going to be like separate challenges outside of it. You know,
yeah.
I have no idea.
I'm imagining what I'm going to do, because you can pick houses, is I'm going to go one all the way through with my house, and then I want to try and see what happens if I go through other houses
right.
that aren't my house.
Yeah.
So
I wonder.
I'll probably do.
I mean, they could always make sequels if it, like, was super popular and did really well.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm sure they could
to.
Write a new storyline and do another one, so.
Yeah. I just, because I remember the Fantastic Beasts game, like, that one did not do, like, that well. It's more, that was more just like an I Spy book, but Fantastic Beasts. Which, I mean, it was actually, like, I had fun playing it when I was just, like, bored and sitting around and playing it on my phone. I didn't hate it. It's just a very quick game to get tired of, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And also, listeners, if you want to, you can go to Harry Potter HogwartsMystery.com and you can, like, put in your email, so you'll get automatically, like, signed up when the game comes out.
All right, so I think that does it for the Phoenix Register. Thanks, Haley. Mm-hmm.
Got you.
So, let us fly on over to the Owlery.
Woo! Hoo, hoo, hoo!
And I see some owls approaching, thanks to Haley's mating call. Thank you.
I tracked them over.
Wait, guys, does that mean Haley is going to turn into an owl? Like Hermione was going to turn into a werewolf?
In like Prisoner of Azkaban?
Yep.
I'm shook. Oh my gosh.
I had to.
Okay, so our first message is from Ali D, and I'm saying Ali D because I will butcher your last name, and I do not want to offend you and embarrass myself and embarrass the entire SpeakBC organization, so I very deeply apologize. But thank you.
Ali.
Yeah, thanks, Ali, for sending this message in. She writes, actually, I do have a final theory about the houses, all four independently. And she goes to break down each house. So, traits of a Pukwudgie. People say that the house represents the heart of a being, but what are those traits? One can look into his or her life to see what they are. The traits that make up a Pukwudgie are love, sensitive, emotional, empathy. And as for an action, they have the impulse of a protector through emotions. Traits of a horned serpent. People say that house represents the mind of a being. But what are those traits? Given Madam President Prickery, it seems to be proof the traits are power, perception, and judgment. Traits of a Thunderbird. Some traits go hand in hand, like intelligence of a Ravenclaw. Soul is another way of saying spirit. There's the personality, the conscious, and the ego. Thunderbird represents the soul of a being. And then for traits of a Wampus, people say it represents the body of a being, and this is the embodiment or a manifestation, the constitution of a house, the shaft, and mortality, and the strength. So if you think of those four working together, because the idea is that we're stronger together, it pulls together one entire being, and that's the theme of unity within Ilvermorny. What do you guys think?
I think it's really interesting. I really like that I really love the Ilvermorny houses and that Ilvermorny story on Pottermore. Like, I'm very frustrated that it's not more in Fantastic Beasts because I feel like the sorting ceremony and the idea of, like, you can kind of pick your house, like, because that thing where it's like more than one house can pick you and then you get to choose which one you want. It's just so cool. And yeah. I love the Ilvermorny houses. I think they're awesome. So I think that this is like giving them more traits because yeah, on Pottermore you just kind of get the body, the soul, the mind, the heart, and not much else.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Like thinking of it as four parts making
a whole,
because it's true. Like just with Hogwarts houses, we all have all of those abilities or personalities in us and values and such, but it's whichever one tends to come out more or that we value more. And I think the same can really hold true for Ilvermorny. And I think that's interesting. I mean, I think I'm sorted as a Thunderbird. And I think I'm probably a very conscience oriented person. I think I listen to my conscience more than a lot of other things. Like I will pick the path of what I think my personal morals or ethics are. And I'm very I stick to that. So I think that's interesting that's.
Well, Lizzie, what's your Ilvermorny house?
I am Wampus.
Oh, okay, cool. One thing I do kind of see though in these traits, which I see kind of being a problem, is I feel like they're trying to do the thing that Joe has been saying that this is not about, is that they're kind of aligned with Hogwarts houses.
Right.
Like the thing is I really don't, because I feel like in how she's saying Pukwudgie is Hufflepuff, Horned Serpent, Slytherin, Thunderbird, Ravenclaw, and Wampus, Gryffindor. And in that sense, I do not think of Thunderbird as, like, this is the Ravenclaw equivalent at all.
Right.
Very far from that. Because, like, I'm a Thunderbird, and I'm a Gryffindor, and it's, like, I'm not a Ravenclaw in any sense of the word. I do like the, even though saying that I'm like, they don't align, I like that kind of wheel that there is, or it's like these are the two houses that work best houses. That was cool. But yeah, I do like to think of like the houses, the Ilvermorny houses, as in it's not odd of people from any house or in like any Hogwarts House could be in Thunderbird. Any Hogwarts House could be in Horned Serpent. Because while it's like, I think it's, what is it? It's kind of like the Hogwarts is what you aspire and what you like look up to and want. But then like Thunderbird is more what you're kind of like the body, like what you actually do and feel and stuff like that. You know, yeah. I forget exactly what it was, what the theory says there, but it's kind of more of that sense where it's like they don't have to line up at all.
Right.
But I do like some of these traits that she put together.
Yeah. So thanks so much for sending that in, Allie.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Mary. She says,
Mari.
Gosh, I knew I was going to say that wrong. You know when you know and you're just like, no, I'm going to pretend like I know what I'm doing. Yeah. No?
Yes, always.
Okay, this next question comes from Mari. And she says, so when Queenie kisses Jacob in the end, she holds her hand over his Mertlap scar. And they make a point of him touching it when he sees her in his shop. Coincidence? Absolutely not.
Never. Of course not. No, I am 110,000% down the rabbit hole of course, that it's like, it only takes away bad memories, and Queenie is a great memory for him. So of course Jacob wouldn't forget her. And so that kiss, I mean, if you're talking about the symbolism of her holding her hand over the scar, it's that right there is such a great moment for him. Them kissing and stuff, even though he's saying goodbye, which is sad, but like the fact that they're kissing is a positive thing for him.
Queenie and the Mertlap have been colluding together to make sure he has all his memories.
Yes.
From the beginning.
That's like, yeah, definitely. When like Newt and Jacob are talking in the case, she's like talking to all the beasts, making plans. Find their back.
And then the last comment comes from Feeny. Did I say that right?
I vote yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think so.
Comes from Feeny, and it says, the more I watch the trailer, I can't stop thinking about that sewer. We see Jacob, Newt, and Tina entering. The family tree looks to be down there. The first picture of Newt from the second film was placed there. Could this be the quartet's hiding place? But from what are they hiding? Is it a meeting point? And then she even says, meet me in the sewer. Oh, so romantic. Which I just love, personally. It almost looks like somebody lives there. But who? I love the idea of that being like a hiding spot.
I like that, too. I'm thinking that I think like maybe like Grindelwald or like even his followers are like having a secret meetings in the tube. That's because you see that wall of... I think that's in the sewer as well. Like, that wall of all the papers about Credence and Leta and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I feel like that's in the sewers as well. I feel like that maybe that's Dumbledore standing there, like, finding things. I think that this is kind of, like, bad news underground terminals. That's what I think.
See, I would lean the way of, like, is this where runaways from that circus are hiding, like, in the sewer? Like,
that's
is
not
Credence hanging out down here, like, with the Maledictus girl?
I could see Credence being down there. Oh, yeah, because I think that they've said that there's also, like, cots in that room with the family tree. And it could be Credence making it, you know, him trying to figure out his family, his family tree. He's figuring out, he's like, holy crap, I'm a wizard. Who am I connected to?
Yeah.
So it could be him making that. Yeah. But also I feel like I'm worried for Credence. I feel like since the kind of the theme, I think for this trailer and possibly this movie is like, you have to choose the right side. I'm worried about which side that Credence is going to choose. I feel like that he could, cause like rewatching Fantastic Beasts, while yes, Graves hits Credence and he's upset with him, I do not feel like Credence completely like pulls away from him, you know what I mean? I don't feel like there is this they're severed. I feel like through the manipulation that he has over Credence, I feel like he can easily bounce back from, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, come on back, let's do work together.
Well, yeah.
Easy, all Credence knows is abuse anyway.
Yeah, so especially. Like, definitely. Mm-hmm.
It's the behavior he understands and he's been raised
he's
on.
To, he's, Definitely. Yeah, so I feel like that some people are thinking, oh no, like he hates him now. I'm like, I don't think he does. I think he's I don't think that at all. I think he's probably still, if he has contact with Credence, that he may still be helping Grindelwald.
Well, I don't think Credence will see Graves anymore, or I guess Grindelwald, so to speak. I'm losing my train of thought. I had it, and then I lost it.
That he's not that body anymore, you're saying?
I feel like it would be interesting to have Grindelwald approach Credence as Grindelwald.
Oh, no, yeah.
You know, because...
I don't think... Well, I guess since we're saying that he, he's, like, turned himself, he just, like, why can't I think of the word? It wasn't Polyjuice Potion, it was just him transforming himself right. So he could theoretically do it again at Warner Brothers. Colin Farrell's back. No, but, yeah, that he, but, and I'm trying to think now, was Credence gone by the time he turned into Grindelwald?
Well, he had imploded.
Before that.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Does he even know? So he doesn't know what's going on.
Newt meets up with Credence and he's like, so what about that grave guy? He's like,
oh my gosh.
You haven't heard.
I just realized that Credence does not know what's going on. He still thinks he's Graves. Oh my gosh. New theory. Haley's here. So, what if this movie, or like whenever he sees Credence, he turns back into Graves? Like, he's like, hey, I'm Colin Farrell again. Because you don't know that I'm. You don't know. He doesn't know he's Grindelwald. He's like, hey, it's me, Graves again. How you doing?
I really hope there's a lot of those visits.
Literally, no, but like, that would make sense though, and I'm loving it in my head right
now. The first
like,
film,
oh my gosh.
Like, Johnny Depp was the big surprise, and the second film, it's Colin Farrell. They just
switch off every movie. Back and forth. Love it. I'm here for it. It's like, it's just like, Dr. Panos, whatever that movie's called, that they're in, that they change back and forth with. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Nope, you're on your own for this one. Nope.
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. Or that one,
okay.
Where they change back and forth. It's just like that. That's the end of my theory at the end. But basically, thanks for your question. I thought it was great. I went real off topic with it.
Yes. So thanks everyone for sending in your owls and questions. We love to get them so then we can come up with these brand new theories and mm-hmm. we can send Haley into downward spirals on the regular.
That's great. Yay.
So now we're going to hand it over to main discussion. And so I'll introduce the topic since I came up with it. Us three ladies were all communication majors, so to speak, mm-hmm. in college. And woo-hoo. Yeah. So,
I'm still in college.
And so I remember one thing that I learned a lot about in college as a media studies focus was how everything is intentional in media, from the music to the colors to the angles. Everything is with a purpose. So since we spent the last talking. I don't know time either. Speaking about this trailer in such an intense depth of what is going on and what do we think could be happening, we didn't want to keep repeating ourselves. So we're just going to switch the approach and we're going to put our good old communication degrees to work and try mm-hmm. and look at the more media-focused side of this trailer. So the colors, the music, you know, the composition, and see if there's anything new we can learn or if anything new comes about in terms of theories from there.
Definitely.
And major props to Amy because she really went to town on this thing, and I appreciate it.
Once a comm major, always a comm major. I think I overdid it a little bit, but, you know, it's fine.
That's what you want. That's what I want.
This way, if you're a communications major and someone is telling you, what are you going to do with your life because you're a communications major, you can say, well, I can be on a Fantastic Beasts podcast and break down this trailer.
Boom. There
and
you go.
They're like, you got me. Like, you're
validated.
There's nothing they can say to that.
And for the record, I have never once since I graduated found this degree useless. So So for all the haters.
I know, yeah, I find that so weird, the tangent, that people say that. Like, what? What do you mean a communications degree is useless? Like, the internet is, like, what's popping right now.
I can do more with my communications degree than you can with your business degree.
Oh, those are fighting words. Let's back up a little.
Anyway.
Bottom line is, all your degrees are great. It just matters how much you use them.
Just don't hate on mine.
Yeah.
So, Amy, do you want to start?
Sure. So, obviously, a big part of any trailer or anything is the music that's put behind it. I mean, things mm-hmm. look laughable without music sometimes. So, the music in this trailer, I guess, first thing I really noticed was it's very driving and pretty ominous. Like, it's very dark.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, like, the first, I don't want to play it because copyright. But, yeah, the intro to it, although at the beginning it's definitely more light.
Yes.
Yes.
And exciting because there's Hogwarts and
right.
Of course.
And that's the other thing I noticed mm-hmm. was every time we see something like familiar, like Hogwarts and the scene with the Deluminator, it mm-hmm. gets very like mystical and nostalgic.
Magical.
The score
yeah.
changes. Yeah.
Oh, they're trying. The thing is, it's like music is, especially in just like media, is key in manipulation. Mm-hmm. Like, if you hear that chime or something, or just something that sounds so familiar and so homey, you're gonna be like, yes, I love this. It doesn't even matter what's playing on screen. I know what
it's
this
so
means.
Subliminal.
I mean, yes, that's why they carried over Hedwig's theme, you know.
It is.
They had to slap Hedwig's theme onto that very first Fantastic Beasts trailer so that those who had no idea what was going on could hear it. And
And they're yeah, like, oh, Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah, it's impossible to not, well, I don't want to say impossible, but it's very difficult to not recognize that tune.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, a lot of people were mad. They're like, why is this Hedwig's theme? Hedwig isn't in Fantastic Beasts.
Because
like,
marketing.
What?
Marketing people. But, it's marketing.
Yeah, it's just like, it has to be in there. It's so recognizable. That's like being like, oh, the Jurassic World movies are new, so we're not going to put the old Jurassic Park theme right. in it. It's like, that's what gets people, that's what get butts in theaters, is hearing that tune. And, like, obviously, once people come into the movie and watch it, they'll realize, oh, this is not Harry Potter. But, like, right. they want to trick them before that. And even in the first Fantastic Beasts movie, they put in Hedwig's theme periodically throughout the film. And I don't think they overuse it at all. I think they only used it like 3 times
yeah.
throughout the whole film, which I think they used it sparingly and they used it well, which is what I think they should continue. I think they should continue doing. I would, while saying this, I would like a more like an additional theme with Hedwig's theme. Like, this is the Fantastic Beasts theme.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying take away Hedwig's theme, but like have another one. And I think there are some scores from the first film that they could weave throughout all of them. Like, the song from Newt's Case, I love that song
yeah.
so much on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I think if they wove that into all of the movies, that'd be great. Yeah, I think they should take... The first soundtrack, I have the first soundtrack, I own it, I listen to it all the time, it's gorgeous. I think that they could take a lot of those tracks and try to weave them out to make the Fantastic Beasts soundtrack just as memorable as the Harry Potter one.
I'm thinking of... when Harry gets the invisibility cloak and the note on it says, use it well. And that's how I yeah. feel about Hedwig's theme in Fantastic Beasts,
well.
Is use it well. So like, don't overdo it. Just use it appropriately. Don't abuse mm-hmm. it. Don't overdo it. It's fine. I mean, here I am telling Warner Brothers what to do, but you know.
Time and time again.
So one thing that I did do with the music is, I played the trailer and I closed my eyes and I didn't watch it. I just listened to the music.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And I wish there was a way for me to strip out the audio in terms of like the talking.
Yeah.
So that I could just hear the
like
music.
A soundtrack.
Right, like a soundtrack. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If I could get that Spotify link, thanks. You know, mm-hmm. do me a solid. But And I found myself, like, obviously I've seen the trailer numerous times that at this point a lot of it is ingrained, but I found myself, like, I found my blood pressure rising as the music continued to escalate as it got closer and closer to the end of the trailer. I found myself feeling nostalgic, and I found myself wanting to open my eyes to be like, wait, what exactly is going on in this moment?
Yeah.
Because I was interested in it. So if anybody's ever curious on a new way to experience the trailer, just play it, but close your eyes.
Close your eyes. That sounds fun. I want to do that after this. That sounds like a fun way to watch it.
Because, like, I also heard a lot of different instruments that I didn't hear the first time. And
yeah,
even, you know, like, flutes are very, they're light and breezy, and, you know, very rarely do you get a heavy metal song with a flute, right? You just don't.
Yeah.
But, like, I heard a lot of, like, brass, and that can be heavy, and it can mean danger. So that was very interesting, at least for me.
That's cool. Yeah. Also, like, for me, I remember when I first heard that there was going to be 5 movies, like, literally one of my first thoughts was, I get 5 more Harry Potter soundtracks, score. Because I listen, I own on my iPhone, on my music, I have bought, like, all of the soundtracks to all the Harry Potter movies. I listen to them when I'm reading, when I'm doing homework. Like, I love the soundtracks of Harry Potter. And it's to the point, and it's so bad, but the songs are so iconic. You can play any song, basically, from any 8 Harry Potter movies. I will know exactly what scene it's from. Like, it's that bad.
Again, that's fighting words until you do trivia with Kat Miller.
Real. I mean, if you play only a 10-second clip from an obscure part of the song, it's a little harder. But if you just played a song from I like to play that at the Wizarding World when I'm there. Be like, they play it. I'll tell you this much: they play a lot of Half Blood Prince, and they play a lot of Or the Phoenix at the theme park.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Goblet, Order, and Half-Blood. Those are, like, the soundtracks they play the most, I'd say, at the theme park. I'm there too much. Nice to meet you.
So let's...
But yeah.
Let's continue on.
I was going to say, a big thing about the music, which we were talking about earlier before we started recording, is so that ending Hedwig's theme that we get for this trailer, very intense, very... Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah.
If you listen closely, dear listeners, and if you are a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you're going to realize, wait a minute, this sounds an awful lot like the Avengers theme from the Infinity War trailer. Like, so similar. It's crazy. And it's like, I'm not saying that either are copying each other, because obviously they're, like, Harry Potter's not copying Avengers. Obviously, they came around first. Hedwig's theme was first. But if you slow down, Hedwig's theme is the Avengers. Like, it's literally the Avengers. The first, like, 4 notes are the exact same notes, and then it diverges. But it's kind of insane. Like, once you hear it, you will not. It will never go away. I promise you this.
Yeah. My life was definitely altered when I learned that.
Yeah, it's very odd. Like, and it's like, it's the tone is the same too, because the darkness of the tone of Fantastic Beasts, it's in the same key as the Avengers one, because usually you would never notice it, because Hedwig's team is happy and light and beautiful, and you would never notice these things. But they're the same. So have a fun little crossover moment, and then play the Fantastic Beasts trailer, and then play the Infinity War trailer, and you'll have a moment. I promise you that. But moving right along.
I digress. We're going to go through the rest of the trailer now and just talk about... I don't know how to phrase this, guys. I don't know how to talk.
Everything. Whatever we notice.
Talk about the color scheme, the theme, the feelings we feel through the visuals.
The elements that make it what it is.
Yes. More than just the characters and the plot and the story. More of, like... the vision of how
does it make cinematography, you feel?
The cinematography of it all.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So let's start with Hogwarts, because obviously that's where the trailer starts. And
yeah,
I don't know if it's just myself, but Hogwarts felt very inviting in this trailer. And like the music we had mentioned was light, but it was grand. It got your attention. It wasn't too serious. And Hogwarts also just looked brighter than we've seen it in most films. I feel like the brightest we'd ever seen Hogwarts was movie one, Quidditch practice.
I feel like this is not that Hogwarts. This is our Half-Blood Prince Hogwarts. This is Deathly Hallows Hogwarts, you know?
This is very true.
So it's like we've never seen this Hogwarts, this version of Hogwarts that bright before, which I really love, especially since 8 years ago, the last time we saw Hogwarts, oh my gosh.
It was destroyed. Yeah.
It was burning. And it's like, oh, thank God, it's okay. Like, that's kind of the feeling I got. Oh, gosh.
I think, like, Hogwarts... Haley's gonna laugh because she saw this in my notes earlier. As I said, Hogwarts is, quote, the cha-ching of this trailer.
It really like, is.
It's very much the centerpiece. It's the selling point. It's the moneymaker. It's there.
Money shot.
Yeah, it's there to bring in the fans who only recognize it from the films and will see it and be like, oh my gosh, there's another Harry Potter film. I'm going to go. Kind of like Hedwig's theme.
Same thing. I'm guessing, I promise you this, I think this film is going to do a lot better than the first Fantastic Beasts movie did. And I'm going to think there's a lot of people who are going to go to this movie who didn't even see Fantastic Beasts nor know that it was a thing.
Exactly.
Well, I watched, and I think, I watched some YouTubers react to the Crimes of Grindelwald trailer. And they're like, oh, this looks really good. Do you think I need to watch the first one before I see this? And they're like, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a sequel. Yes.
And
it's funny too. Sorry, it's funny too how you're saying it's the money shot. It's funny because, like, how it's the moneymaker shot. Because the trailer knows that it is. I love how it's hiding behind this luscious green at first. Very Last Jedi-esque, I would say, also, of the island in that. That's what it makes me think of. But just, like, I love how the shot just, like, it's, oh, like, oh, what's hiding behind this green thing? It's Hogwarts! Like, it's like, hiding it from you at first, too. I really like
it's
that.
Like, it's like a travel ad. Like, look at
it
this
is a travel ad.
Lush, 100%. Green Scottish terrain. And, oh, Hogwarts, you want to go there.
I do have to say, I was taken aback when I saw Hogwarts, because I was like, I don't think we'd ever seen it this pretty.
No.
Like,
it's gorgeous.
I mean,
it's before Harry's gotten to it.
So, of course it's gorgeous. He couldn't have done anything to it yet. It's before James Potter got to it. Of course it's perfect.
Real, oh my gosh, it's before the Marauders got to it.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Man, ooh, no Whomping Willow.
Oh, that's true. That would be cool to kind of see, you know?
Like, the absence of it? That would be too far. Like, I know people are like, you can't operate. That would be too far. If they're like, oh, look, it's the Whomping Willow outside. It's like, no movie. You can't do that. That would be too far. That's too inconsistent for me. I'd be like, I'm out. I wouldn't be out, but I would be out mentally.
So, Sam's Hogwarts is like the centerpiece of this trailer and what brings people in. It makes sense that they make it the first shot of the trailer. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Because if they had started with anything else, like imagine if they had started with Johnny Depp Grindelwald in his carriage. People
would be like, what?
People have been like, I don't understand. They might have thought it was a horror flick. I mean, I probably would have thought it was a horror flick.
You've been scared.
Yeah. So it has to be that first shot. It has to be Hogwarts.
Because even if you're just clicking through a quick, like, scrolling on your feed, if this just pops up and it just goes like, boom, Hogwarts, you're like, ooh, what's this? Harry Potter, you know?
Yeah, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah. And another thing that I noticed about Hogwarts is that they make the castle look really large.
Mm-hmm.
Which might sound dumb because we know Hogwarts is gigantic. But I
don't know. Okay, now I'm looking at it. You're right. The skyline that I'm looking at looks much larger than it ever has before. Like, it just, like, looking at, I have the trailer paused.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, looks very big. Like, even compared to, like, other skylines that I've seen of it.
Like, it seems like in the other films, Hogwarts was impressive, but it's almost dwarfed by the landscape,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like, it looks yeah. like very small, kind of nestled in the hills.
Now
and here it's just like
move out of the way, hills.
Yeah. So,
I just thought of what this reminds me of. What? Like this version in this like looking at Hogwarts. It reminds me of at Universal on the journey, the Hogwarts Journey ride. The end of the very end of the ride when you fly over the lake and then you fly like up into Hogwarts. That's yeah. what this kind of reminds me of, like that shot that yeah. you get when you're flying back at the end of the ride. I've ridden this ride probably 50 times. I am not exaggerating. In the slightest. Like, I wish I was exaggerating. I am not. I think, like, that's the kind of, like, feeling I get from this shot is the same one you get in that ride.
And so I included a screenshot, and it's 14 seconds in, if people want to look at it. Of when the doors are opening up and people are walking in, and the camera angle makes it look so giant that the people,
oh, yeah.
the doors are tiny. And mm-hmm. I'm almost feeling to myself like this Hogwarts is intimidating and it's there to make a statement and yeah. it's impressive. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hogwarts in Potter was familiar, it was friendly. It was
fun times, yeah.
You know, like, it just feels like there's a difference between these two castles, even though they're the exact same, but it's just because yeah. We're going to see Hogwarts much less in this series, whereas Hogwarts mm-hmm. was a frequent backdrop in the others.
Agreed. It's mm-hmm. like, it almost looks like this is a fortress they're breaking into versus Hogwarts normally, where it's like, oh, it's like the place where we have adventures. I don't think we're going to have an adventure at Hogwarts this time. This is business, serious business happening.
Yeah.
Well, what I think is really interesting, and I think that's totally on purpose, that it feels like a fortress that they're entering. I think these Aurors are not welcome here.
No, agreed. Yeah.
And I think this like bird's eye angle view of like looking down at them with those giant doors, it feels very removed. Like they're not supposed to be there. The castle does not welcome them.
Amy, I am so happy you said that because I have a point to make later on and this supports it. And I'm so yes. happy that you brought
that
up.
Page.
And then I think the last thing we can touch on about Hogwarts before we move forward is when we're in the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, which we're just referring to it as because that's what we know it the most as. You know, it could be a study hall. It could be the Transfiguration classroom. It could just be where Dumbledore hangs out when he meets with his non-Auror friends, etc.
Yeah.
That classroom is very bright. There was a lot of light inside of it.
It is.
In Dumbledore's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, also, I feel like it has to do with, we were saying before, how those familiar scenes are very light. They're very, like, inviting looking.
Right.
And it's like, while the scene might be them being aggressive towards Dumbledore and he might not want them there, we're, like, what Warner Brothers and what the movie wants you to see is, wow, look, I know this room. I know right. Hogwarts. It's good old Dumbledore. Like, it's kind of, it's bringing that kind of nostalgia, happiness again.
Yeah.
To the screen.
It's another moment of recognition.
Yeah. Rather, I feel like that's the thing. Some of, like, the theming and the lighting and how they're filming this movie is not necessarily matching up with the plot. It's matching up with how they want you to feel nostalgically.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think I'd ever seen the classroom so light.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it very dark. You know, we've seen it with curtains. Well,
mm-hmm.
You know,
the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers, I mean, apart from Lupin, don't usually bring many happy thoughts forward, so that might be a reason.
That's very true. So let's move on to Newt, because what I had written down was like there were a lot of yellow hues when it came to Newt, and I'm just gonna let you take it away.
Oh, Amy, yeah,
because I know you had a lot on just like the warm colors.
Yeah, just in general, this entire trailer is it's a warm palette. There's a lot of browns, a lot of neutrals. Even in the darker clips, it's mostly like browns and like very dark maroons, not even like true black really until like the end of the trailer mm-hmm. when things kind of build.
Yeah, with like Grindelwald and stuff, yeah.
Right, right. And I think it's interesting, warm colors like brown, orange, and red, they're usually used in filmmaking to kind of convey like a range of emotions from excitement to anger. And it seems like things get almost more towards that orange-red spectrum as the trailer builds. Like we see that graveyard scene with Newt and Dumbledore. They like hit the ground with their wands.
Nope,
and
that's
see
Theseus, my love.
Oh, Theseus. Sorry. Yeah.
You good.
They see the color, the like orange-red color go up. And then, like I said, it kind of drops off to black more towards the end of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But I also noticed, like, even like Queenie, who in the first film was very flamboyant and bright with her
bubble
colors.
Gum, yeah.
Yeah, very girly, very flashy. She's wearing a brown coat in this trailer. I thought that was very interesting.
It almost kind of goes with what you're talking about with her hair as well, too. Like, it's right. not that same kind of bouncy blonde curls. It's more, I feel like even her hair is dyed a different, like a slightly different color in this film as well.
Right. And I think it's interesting, too, because I was kind of looking into color theories with this, and brown is like a color that's supposed to be like steadfastness and stability. So, I mean, Queenie, I know we've been talking about maybe she's going dark. Could this debunk that theory? Is she more like the solid, stable rock of the foursome there? Like,
to, I don't know. To that, I feel like you're – so when usually it's saying brown is like this homestead, I feel like that's in the sense of that's how you see them usually. Like, I'm thinking of maybe like Mrs. Weasley. She wears a lot of dark, like earthy tones, like reds, browns, and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's how you see her. But Queenie, this is a transition from her, from those pinks and bright colors. It's even though it is a brown maternal color, it's the toning down of her wardrobe, which is worrying. You know what I mean? It's not right. necessarily the color. It's like the spectrum that her clothes are going to. Kind right. of like reminds me, like a big example, I think, in the Harry Potter films that comes quickly to mind is Umbridge's wardrobe in Order of the Phoenix. Is like they meticulously did this so well where throughout the movie, she starts in very like cute pink, like millennial pink, you know, like that very light pink. And then by the end of the movie, she's in that extremely dark, like harsh, like almost red pink throughout the story, where it's like while pink, yes, is a positive color or like a girly color, a happy color, you can just see by the tone of her pink that's shifting through, it's like clearly changing, showing her character.
I love that. I never realized that before.
You haven't? With Umbridge? Oh, yeah. No, I've like read all those like behind the scenes books. They did that very intentionally. Watch Order of the Phoenix. Every scene that Umbridge is in, her clothes get slightly darker pink.
I love
every
that.
Every single scene. It's so cool. Mm-hmm.
They're so genius.
Everything's on purpose.
Yeah, it's every single scene she's in. And like a little accent or her jacket or her dress will go to a darker shade of pink throughout the entire movie. It's really cool.
And Amy, when you talk about these warmer colors, it makes so much sense now because there are trailers that you watch where it feels like you can't even see it because it's so dark. Whereas this one, like at least everything is very visible. And it's true. You don't get to the dark parts until the end where we get Grindelwald in his carriage and he's escaping. And then we're in the graveyard and you almost can't even tell that it's Theseus that's standing next to him. And, you know, the coloring just switches so nicely that it just gives you such a switch.
Yeah.
And, for most of the trailer, like, until we get to those darker points, it looks, like, very, like, sepia, like, old Paris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, sepia-toned photographs, postcards, and I love that.
It's gorgeous, yeah. The thing is, it's like Fantastic Beasts won their Oscar for costuming for a reason.
Right.
It said, like, they're in these films, and of course, she did a lot of the other Harry Potter films as well. The Harry Potter films are so meticulous in how they color characters and how they color scenes, and it's like this is very much in the forefront in not just these movies, but the entire Potter franchise. Yeah. The Wizarding World logo, if you will.
So the next thing I want to highlight on very quickly is I think apparition is going to be very important in this film. And the reason I say that is because with every like text card that comes up during the trailer, the text cracks and essentially apparates out of the frame.
Even the Warner Brothers logo does.
Yeah, all of it is apparition. And even with the Hallows popping up at the end, I started to notice that different symbols pop up during those text cards. If you watch it very slowly, you can see a triangle pop up behind one, and then you have like a circle very vaguely mm-hmm. in the background. And everything is done for a reason. And it makes me think back to the start of the trailer where the Aurors apparate into Hogwarts and everyone threw a fit. And then the article came out from Jessica Williams saying, like, don't freak out. Everything is for a reason. I feel like all of this is coming together, that like this is a clue that there's something with apparition that's going to mm-hmm. be important. I don't know what it is, obviously.
Yeah, and especially like when you're talking about the Deathly Hallows in the end, that kind of smoky magic, that's the magic that we often see with apparition additionally. But it's really cool. I agree. I think it's going to be like that. We don't get to see that much apparition in the Potter films because, of course, they're underage.
Right.
Most of the films. And Harry doesn't really have his license even in that last movie. Oh, Harry. Ridiculous. But yeah, I think it's going to be cool to see it more. And we've seen it, of course, even in the first movie. I like that really memorable shot of Tina and Newt looking back and forth and how the camera switches between them and then they apparate together. I really like that shot a lot. But it's like, just even that, they've already kind of planted that seed of apparition happening a lot and being used a lot in these movies. Because it's just, like, the most obvious mode of transportation if you're an adult.
Right. Like, it's how I would go to work if I could.
Yeah.
And I even feel like the ending scene where Newt and Theseus are, like, thrusting their wands into the ground and you have this protective...
I just thought of something.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Oh no, he's right. Because you know how you're like, okay, so apparition is the key, and everyone's with this theory of like the reason that the apparition ended up is because of Grindelwald, and they're like, I'm just imagining, how did Grindelwald escape from prison? He apparated. Darn it! And that's why they have to start putting up all these protections around, because he just keeps escaping. He keeps apparating. They're
what
like,
if man! What if he just apparates out of that carriage?
Like, that would be, like, they're like, we got you now. They got their wands pointed at him. He's like, you guys are dumb. And he just apparates away. And they're like, man, we didn't think about that.
Well, obviously, someone had to have made that mistake once. Otherwise, like, who really is going to be like, you know what we should make sure we do? Like, this apparition stuff, that's really cool. But we got to make sure that people, like, can't do it if we're trying to, like, keep them somewhere. Like,
yeah.
Like, that stuff doesn't just come to mind. It happens because... An incident occurs.
It's like the stupid labels on like coffee cups, and just like you're like, that's dumb. Why would I do that? It's because someone did it.
Right.
It's that.
So going back to my last point about Newt and Theseus in the graveyard, it looks like there's like a protective shield coming up from like their mm-hmm. wands, and it made me think of the shields from Deathly Hallows Part 2 when they're protecting the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And that also almost makes me think that they're doing something to try and prevent apparating from whatever season's going on.
Like to the graveyard,
yeah. Like they're trying to stop someone from getting in or from getting out. I'm not sure. I could be making this up. I could be completely wrong. But there's just so mm-hmm. much apparition in that trailer. And the fact that someone like went and called it, I was like, "Don't worry about it. It's gonna be explained. Like she knows what she's doing." I'm very excited to see how it all plays out.
Agreed. Yeah. It's gonna be cool.
Huh.
And so next, we're gonna talk about all of Dumbledore and Newt's interactions in the trailer, because this is exactly where Amy's original point is gonna come into play. So their meetings are outdoors, or it feels like they're in hiding, like they're doing some covet meetup. And I'm curious if maybe Newt is supposed to be undercover. Like maybe people aren't supposed to know he's working with Dumbledore. Just because we have that quote where it's like, I know he's following under your orders, and Dumbledore essentially acts like a really smart modern day politician by like going around the question to answer it by being like, well, it's not like he like follows orders really well anyway, so how would you know if he's really like following my orders, blah blah blah. And the fact that Amy, you brought up this whole idea that these orders are not welcome further supports this idea that, you know, whatever is going on between Dumbledore and Newt, they don't want the orders involved at this time. Or, you know, maybe they're trying to keep them out of something.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, you say, like, maybe Newt's undercover. We see a lot of shots of him, like, looking over his shoulder, like, checking to see if he's followed, and the camera's following him at that point. So, like, who are they hiding this mission from? I'm guessing the Ministry, but it's just interesting.
I mean, maybe it's been kind of, maybe the government, like it is in much of the Harry Potter books, is corrupt, and I'm sure that Grindelwald has people in the Ministry working on his side, you know, so they don't want their plans or their information getting back to him that way.
Well, yeah, we're fairly confident Leta is in that room, right? Leta and Theseus. So, and we still don't know where that relationship stemmed from and who is on what side and what.
Yeah, where the loyalties lie.
Yeah. So that could be its whole other thing. Amy, I know you went a little bit more into detail about Dumbledore and Newt. Do you want to break that down a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I thought it was interesting just the choice of camera angles and like shot framing when we get to Dumbledore and Newt in this trailer. A lot of the camera angles kind of tell us how we're supposed to feel about those characters. So just like those like high above shots of the Aurors in the castle made us feel like they're not supposed to be there. They're outsiders. Like, we're very removed from the situation.
Yeah, it's like we don't even know who they are, but immediately we're like, they are not welcome.
Exactly. And we're farther away. We don't know who they are. We can't see their faces, blah, blah. So, like, when we get to Dumbledore and Newt, though, these camera angles are brought down to, like, eye level. And that's very, like,
these are our buds.
Relatability. Yeah. Like, we're eye to eye with these characters. We know who they are. We know we're supposed to sympathize with them. We're, like, on their level. A lot of Dumbledore's shots are very, like, loose, like, medium shots. Like, they're not, like, super tight in on his face, which is more, like, usually intense shots.
It's not, like the opening of Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Exactly. Gosh. Like, it's not, like, really loose to the point where we can't see his facial expressions. It's just very, like, natural feeling. Like, he fits into the surroundings. He feels very at ease. When we see Newt, again, we're at eye level. Like, we're very, the camera line is very obvious where it, like, lines up right with his eyes. And I think that's interesting. Like, when you watch it and you pause it, it's like he's looking right at you. And also, there's a lot of camera angles that tell a lot about their relationship between Newt and Dumbledore. There's, like, a sequence where Newt kind of looks up. And then, like, the camera, like, pans up and it's, like, Dumbledore standing on top of a building. And I thought that was interesting. Like, that kind of, like, literally shows Newt looking up to Dumbledore, like, his admiration. I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, is a cool shot. It's, I don't feel, do you think that, I didn't even catch that, when he's down on the street and he's looking up, do you think he sees Dumbledore up there? That I didn't even, like, I didn't even get that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's like originally from the same scene or if they just.
But that's a good idea, though. In that way. I kind of just assumed it was chopped together, but that makes a lot of sense to me. That's he's like, oh, he's like waiting for Dumbledore. He's like, oh, he's on top of the building. Here's what's happening in this scene. He said, "Meet me at this building, Newt," and he's like, "Okay, I will wait outside the building." Looks up, oh, he's on top of it.
Oh, you meant the roof.
That is what's happening.
Good. And then also, like, right after the Dumbledore reveal, when we kind of see him turn around, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's Jude Law at that moment. You see Newt is kind of, like, skulking behind him in a way, and it's like that power dynamic, like where Dumbledore's foreground and Newt's like in the back, like almost like trailing along like a child following an puppy. Adult.
Yeah. Definitely. I feel like, especially since all the stuff that we know about Dumbledore from the books and from his past is that here's the thing. Newt is a Hufflepuff, and then Dumbledore is the Gryffindor in this situation. We've had a whole movie without Gryffindors, and it's been fun in games, but it's like, and Dumbledore's come in this movie, he's like, hello, welcome back to Gryffindor House, I'm important. You know? I feel like that's what's happening here. And as a Gryffindor, I can appreciate greatly.
I just think it really shows who's kind of running this operation. Like, yeah. It's totally Dumbledore, again, pulling strings.
Good old mastermind.
Newt following because he admires Dumbledore and looks up to him. I think it's very
reminiscent telling. Of Harry. it's kind of funny how we've been talking about how it's like Newt is literally like the prototype for how he treats Harry.
Yeah.
So oh, yeah. At least that's what we see so far.
He's tried this before.
I'm so excited. Like, I say this over and over again, but I'm just so excited to have all five of these movies and then just go directly into the Potter films and see how it changes my perception of Dumbledore in those movies.
Oh my gosh, I know. Also, there's this other shot that I wanted to talk about. Just that shot of Grindelwald and Rosier standing like on that dais.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the symbolism in this shot. Like, it's fabulous. They're literally in the center of a giant audience. They're like on a raised platform.
Yeah.
The
she audience seems to be his Bellatrix, just yes. like from we can see from this.
Exactly. And like the audience is in a curved like
room
orientation. Yeah, yeah, like they're an curved auditorium around them. Like literally revolving around them, basically. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool. Like, I feel like this has to be the followers, just for that reason. Like, just the way that they're so center in this.
And they all look, they don't look, like, aggressive or angry. They look like, they have, like, their hands in their laps, or, like, they're standing up. They look very,
which is like, even scarier. Interested. They're just, like, normal Joes.
Yeah.
Right. Normal no badgers, right. I guess.
I feel like Grindelwald is probably a better manipulator than Voldemort is, because I feel like Voldemort has a problem where he can't love and stuff, so he's not very good at like relating to the people, which I feel like he's going to be a great speaker, because of course also he has this big parallel to World War II mm-hmm. and to Hitler, where it's like that was his thing, was that he could talk to a group of people and really make them love him,
right.
And I feel like that's going to be his thing as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that's also kind of echoed in the light that's at the top of that frame.
Oh, it's just like pouring onto him, like
it's
almost like
literally light beams coming down at them. Yeah. Like the light is dispersing towards them, like shining on them. And then
it's like, forget the rest of these people.
And I feel like,
yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's the point in the trailer where we go from the light hues, like the lightness of it, to more of the darker.
Ooh, you're right, it does.
We have that light right in the center on Grindelwald and Rosier, and then we have this darkness of the followers that what we're presuming to be followers. And the next thing we know, we hit, you know, we go to Tina, and she's in that black coat, and she looks very suspicious, and she's got her collar popped up, and everything from then on out becomes darker.
Yeah, that's the line of, like, which side should you choose? Like, that's that point of the trailer as well, when it says that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were saying, Haley, about how you think Rosier is Grindelwald's Bellatrix.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was really cool. When I kind of looked closer at even literally their feet where they're standing on that dais, Grindelwald is truly the center. Like, there's circles on the floor, and Rosier is just to the right of that circle, whereas Grindelwald's in the center of the circle. So she's like literally his right-hand woman.
And her feet are like literally pointing towards him as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm trying to think what show that was from, where they're like, if your feet's pointed at me, it means that they like
That's
you.
That's what I was thinking about!
What show is that from?
I was thinking of that!
What is that from? I can't put...
Like, if your feet are, if your feet are pointing at someone, it means you're, like, you're thinking about them or something. Like,
What is that from? I cannot place it. I know it's from, like, a show. I want to
say Grey's Anatomy, but I feel like that's not right.
No,
I
don't think it is because I haven't... I don't know if this is from a show. I think these are just... wow, this is very
It's a thing. No, it's a real thing, but there's, like, a show where it happens, where they're, like, it's, like, an episode around it. I was watching that
show recently, and now I can't think of what it was.
Well, like, I Googled if a guy's feet is pointed towards you, and, like, all these different articles pull up, like, about, like, flirting and body language, and this is very off the topic, and sorry.
Yeah. But that's a sign, is if your their feet is pointed towards you, it means...
They have interest. Like,
it shows a level of attraction.
Yes.
Yeah.
I cannot think of what it's from. It's like from a movie or something. It's going to bug me. I'm going to watch it and I'm going to be like,
If anybody knows, please write us in. I'll put it in the
common room. Everyone in the common room, please write what movie show this is from. And if I find it first, I will write it.
other than that, is there anything else we want to highlight about the trailer?
Gosh, it's pretty.
Yeah, I just have to think, it's a really well done trailer. Like,
oh, it's great. Better than anything I could have imagined.
The film looks like, totally really worth the wait.
Like, the reason that I thought originally was like, ooh, I think they're worried about publicity for the movie. The reason it took so long is there's so much like CGI and like they put a lot of work into this trailer before it had to be put out. No, it's gorgeous. It makes sense why it took so long.
It gives me high expectations for this film.
It does, yeah. Me too. I hope not too high. Like, I hope it doesn't, like... I don't think it will. I think I will be perfectly
content. Excited. Yeah. But I do agree with you, Haley. I think this will outperform the first one.
100% yeah. I do. And I feel like the reason they're like, Warner Brothers is like, Joe, we gotta bring in Dumbledore. We need that. While Fantastic Beasts is great, it didn't have enough of those recognizable faces and locations from Harry Potter for people to connect the dots, where this one does.
All right, so that wraps it up on the main discussion for this week, and we're going to continue with our motion pictures theme on the Time Turner.
Yes!
I wanted to make a Time Turner sound, but I couldn't think of it. Clock, clock, tick, 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 doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. There we go.
That's the Twilight Zone.
Darn it.
Close. Actually, Warner Brothers introduced the world to talking motion pictures in 1927, which I thought was pretty awesome because that's the year for Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was Warner Brothers.
Too bad that wizards don't do... Arthur Weasley would love it.
Yeah.
Like, he'd go see
He would be all about this Time Turner segment. So, that film was The Jazz Singer, starring Al Jolson. It was the first feature-length talking movie, so there had been short films previously, but this was the first feature. The runtime was 89 minutes, 93 minutes with the overture.
That's a long time for a film in the 1920s, I feel like.
I know. It's so short for a film now, though.
Yeah.
You know what I find kind of funny? How, like, the times of films have really changed. So it went from, like, this kind of short movie, and then for a while they were, like, 4 hours, like, with Gone with the Wind. And, like, you know what I mean? Where movies used to have intermissions, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's back. And then it went down, I think, to, like, an hour and a half. And now we're kind of going back up again with, like, 2 hour, 2 hour, 30 minute movies, you know?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a side note.
2 hour, 45 is, like, the pushing point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it happens, you know what I mean? Like, movies nowadays are almost 3 hours. Like, we're going to need intermission again.
I know. Gonna have to bring that back.
Mm-hmm.
And the budget for this, I thought was kind of funny. $422,000.
Tight.
That again feels like, but doesn't that also feel like a lot for the 1920s?
Because also inflation you have to think about, too.
Yeah, well, they were also paying for the sound equipment as well. True. So you got to figure that. But yeah, more than a silent film would cost. But they made bank in the box office. For only spending that, they made $4 million in the U.S. box office and $3 million worldwide.
So a total of 7 million, right? That's the math?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty good for only spending $400,000.
It's true.
And in total, it really only had about 2 minutes of synchronized speech. but that was a big step, and it had music, too. So this is actually where that famous line came from, "You ain't heard nothing yet." So very symbolic of the first movie dialogue you could actually hear.
It's a giant pun, and I love it.
Exactly.
That's so great. Oh, also, just a quick insert. I calculated the inflation for the cost of the movie. The cost now, the inflation of that would be $6 million to make the movie. Which is still pretty good. It's excellent still. It's still very cheap for a movie.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So the plot of the film was... I have to admit, it's been a real long time since I've watched this. I can't remember if it's pronounced Jackie or Jakey.
Okay. I forgive you.
But I think Jakey. It's Jackie. Jackie Rabinowitz is from a Jewish family. He gets caught singing jazz music, scandalous, and is disowned by his father. He runs away and becomes a Broadway sensation. And yes, there's blackface involved, which is very awkward.
Not good.
So, WB, glad you ditched that.
That's probably why they didn't mention it in Fantastic Beasts. We're like, we don't need that.
Yeah, let's not bring that one up.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it wasn't politically correct, but the film made a really huge impact on the motion picture industry. It paved the way for more sound movies in the future. And that transition from silent to talking films was actually pretty slow, but The Jazz Singer was the first step for that.
I have to go back for a quick second to when we were talking about how they excluded it from Fantastic Beasts because it was the perfect opportunity to make a Hamilton joke. And since we are not a Hamilton podcast, but secretly are a Hamilton podcast, I just need to say... I'm taking myself from this, like, I'm getting the line wrong.
I'm erasing myself from the narrative.
Yes, I'm erasing myself from the narrative. Essentially what WB did in Fantastic Beasts. They're like, and it is.
Tight. Yeah.
Ooh, very, very side note. I have Hamilton tickets in June. Ah! Just a brag real quick. Continue.
Oh, boy. Okay. In 1996, the writer of The Jazz Singer was nominated at the first Academy Awards. It, also in 1996, The Jazz Singer was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry of culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant motion pictures.
I like aesthetically significant.
I, too, yes. Am aesthetically significant.
I should be put into the preservation.
And in 1998, the film was chosen by the American Film Institute as one of the best films of all time, ranking number 90 on that list.
Yeah, what's number one?
Pretty crazy.
I guess they have a lot of favorite films.
I think number one is Fantastic Beasts. Let's I just say that that's right. What it is. don't Google that. Don't try to confirm that. But I think that's true.
Oh,
trust us.
Number one is Citizen Kane. Okay.
Oh, okay, whatever. Yeah. That makes sense. Same thing.
Okay. Yeah, same diff. It's fine. That's so cool, though. Like, especially the fact that it was, like, Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2 minutes of speech. Wow.
We've come so far.
I know, right? And also, it's funny because, like, back then, people used to be like, oh, it's just a phase. They'll never, the talkies will never take off.
Uh-huh.
Oops.
If only they could see us now.
I know, we won't shut up now. On that note, it's time for our podcast question this week. So, we talked about earlier how we think that Apparition is going to play a big part in the Fantastic Beasts series due to how they've put it into the marketing, how when the title sequences come up, we have Apparition there, and we see the characters doing it a lot. And also, we have a Jessica Williams quote, where she says to trust J.K. Rowling about Apparition, like not to question it too much. So basically our podcast question is, how do you think that Apparition will play a really big part in the Fantastic Beasts series? Like, do you think it'll be interwoven in a specific way? Do you think it will? Do you think it won't? Tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. And you can also drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And also, please, please, please leave us a review on iTunes. We love to hear from you guys.
And we love to stay in touch. So you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. You can get some really cool perks with that. Join our exclusive common room and much more.
Mm-hmm. We have fun in there. We have a lot of fun on the common room page.
I'm Amy.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Lizzie. Case closed.